Time now to focus on the community on WAMW. Each week we shine a spotlight on a topic important to our community and focus on the community. Focus brought to you by First Federal Savings Bank, Washington's locally owned bank. And with the closing of another legislative session, it's time for a state update as we welcome State Senator Eric Bassler in the studio with us. Good morning, Senator.
Dwayne, good morning. Good to be with you again.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. It's a good time to have you because we just wrapped up another session, and hats off to you and your fellow senators and those working in the legislature to wrap it up in a timely manner this time around.
We did. We actually finished up about a week early, which is kind of nice. I mean, it's nice from a personal perspective, but then also just from a state fiscal perspective, it actually saves the taxpayers money the shorter our session is. So it was good to wrap up a week early.
Does this mean all got together and sung Kumbaya
well,
at the end of it?
You know, there is at least some of that going on, because when you think about, you look at all the bills that passed the legislative process this year, 92% of those bills had bipartisan support. So quite often when you see the kind of maybe some of the chaotic things on TV that maybe goes on in Washington, D.C., that just doesn't seem to happen at the more local level, whether it's with the city, counties, or towns, or even the state level. There really tends to be a lot of bipartisan support for bills that we work on. So we turned out this year about 92% of them had bipartisan support, which is good to work together like that.
Man, I love hearing that, because you hear that word thrown around so much, that bipartisan word. Everybody wants that. You know, can't we all just get along? But sometimes that's easier said than done. You know, ultimately, you guys and gals are all there for one mission, to do the people's work. So the better you work together, the better things flow.
Yeah, it really is. And that's one thing that's nice about the state legislative process, is especially through the committee hearings. That's where people that really have good input, not just fellow legislators, but people, just, you know, common, ordinary, everyday people that want to come up and testify on any specific bill can do that. And they can testify whether that bill would have a positive or a negative impact on, you know, on their lives, on their business, on their community. And that's what I would still say after 7 years, is that the best part of the process is the committee hearings and getting that input from local citizens.
Well, let's dive in. The big one, of course, the budget bill. This was a budget year, and sometimes that one can get a little hairy here and there, but the budget bill was passed, and school funding was a biggie when it comes to the budget this year.
Yeah, it really was. If we go back, say, 9 months, maybe 8 months, you know, when we were several months into the pandemic, there were some significant concerns about what the budget numbers were going to look like. And then we got some reasonably good news in December when they did the forecast, and then we got very good news just a couple weeks ago. And the budget that we originally had worked on were based on the December numbers. And then once April numbers came around, it was about $2 billion more for the two-year period. And that's a lot of money. And so we were able to gear a significant portion of that $2 billion, about half of it, to K-12 education. So where we ended up on K-12 funding this year was, again, right above 50% of the total budget goes towards K-12 funding. That was a $1.9 billion increase over the last budget, which is a significant increase. We had some significant increases when it comes to special education funding, about $196 million over the two-year period. We also did a lot more dollars towards what's called ELL, English Language Learners. So those are young kids that don't speak English, or they don't speak it very well. So really communities throughout the state, not just, you know, you might assume that's larger cities, but as you know, there's a fair number of non-English speakers here in Washington, and those dollars would help local schools fund programs, or help them fund more dollars towards English language learners. That was another big one. When we look at the overall increase, again, it was about $1.9 billion. And then you also factor in the federal stimulus dollars that are coming to local schools, which is about $3 billion. So there's significant dollars coming in to help local schools with various things, and it should be a good couple of years for schools and teachers and educators.
So much needed. I mean, so much needed, because among those with this money will be a little stipend, a little extra for the teacher's pay, which, man, that's so long overdue.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. We still have our teacher appreciation grant in the budget like we've had in previous years, but this really will provide an opportunity for local schools to pass on some of those extra dollars to teachers via teacher salaries. And that's one thing we need to keep working on, because it's very important that Indiana be competitive, for example, with other states in the Midwest. Because, you know, a teacher could easily go somewhere else if he or she chose to do that, to get higher pay in other states. And this will help us really move significantly in the direction of being some of the better paid teachers in the Midwest. That's what we're shooting for. The governor had a task force that put together a study and said we needed to have about another $600 million towards K-12 education for teacher salaries. And again, when we put another 1.9 these next 2 years in the budget, we sure hope that a significant portion of those dollars will go to local teachers.
Well, I think we learned to appreciate teachers even more when the pandemic struck and parents were doing the at-home learning with the students and realizing just how much of an impact these teachers have on their students' lives.
Yeah, it was a crazy year. It was a crazy year for a lot of people. And if you think about teachers and educators having to go from kind of a normal environment, which was, you know, just last January and last February, to sending the kids home to do remote learning, all sorts of challenges with teaching via remote learning, especially the first few months, technology challenges. Just getting kids used to learning that way, and in some ways for teachers, in some ways learning to teach that way was another challenge. But I found that educators and teachers have done a great job coming through it. We're going to have to continue to work with what's called lost learning. I think anybody, when you talk to any educator, they'll talk about the fact that over the last 12 months, the kids have not learned as much as they otherwise would have if they were in the classroom. But we did allocate another $150 million towards lost learning. Plus, there were significant federal dollars that go towards that. And that's not going to be a thing that we can solve here in the next month or 2 months or 6 months. That might be a problem or challenge we need to continue to work with over the next 2 or 3 years to kind of get kids back up to speed where they otherwise would have been.
We're talking to Senator Eric Basler today as we wrap up another legislative session. There was some help for small businesses in this year's budget as well.
Yeah, there were. Again, COVID is kind of the big word, the big phrase. You know, we allocated about $60 million towards local small businesses, and those are truly small businesses, and the focus was businesses that are in the hospitality industry. All businesses have taken it on the chin over the last 12 months, or at least most businesses have. But none more significantly than the hospitality industry. So you think about hotels, you think about restaurants, you think about sports bars, you think about athletic venue type places. They have been significantly impacted over the last 12 months. So we put some money in the budget to try to help the local small businesses continue to weather that storm. And then hopefully, as the economy continues to recover, and it is recovering, that they will all bounce back. But we know there's going to be a significant number of them that have either gone out of business or very well could go out of business here in the next 3 to 6 months if they continue to struggle.
Staying on the COVID topic, liability protection, that was another big one that you guys tackled with this year's session, making sure your nonprofits, your Montgomery Ruitton Clubs, mm-hmm. or the group that rent buildings are not liable if a COVID spread would happen in that facility.
No, it really was. That was one of the top issues we wanted to deal with. And we had several bills to start the session, and those bills dealt with kind of different types of entities. And what we ended up doing is combining it into one bill. So businesses are covered. Nonprofit organizations are covered. So you think about entities like the Ruertan, a Kiwanis Club, a Rotary Club. You think about YMCAs. Schools were covered. Communities were covered. So you think, here in Washington, for example, the community building at Eastside Park, there would be some hesitancy by the city of Washington to rent that out if there wasn't some type of liability coverage. So it was very broad-based coverage. We were pleased to get that put in place because if we did not, it was going to have a chilling effect on everything from your radio station to the local communities, to nonprofits, to churches. And we wanted to try to give them as much peace of mind as possible that when they felt comfortable, they could start doing those community events again and not be worried about some type of a class action lawsuit against them because of it.
Talk about this bill on the leveling, giving the county commissioners a little more oversight with the local health departments and how that came about.
Right. I think in some ways you look out throughout the state of Indiana, 92 counties and the cities and the towns, they all handled, the local health department all handled COVID kind of in the best way they could. And they've done really an exceptional job considering what we've been through over the last 12 months. But the idea was brought forward that there should be some type of an oversight by an elected body. And so what we settled on was Generally speaking, if you think about, especially in Southwest Indiana, you think about the county commissioners as having the authority over the health department. So there's going to be input that's going to be able to be provided or asked for through the county commissioners. And again, that was another COVID-related bill, and there were many of them.
Well, and you know, this is something we hope we'll never have to use again, but you got to put it in place because you never know.
Yeah, you really do. I mean, you know, I guess the one that they compare this one to is the Spanish flu of, I think, maybe 1918 or so. So it was about 100 years ago. And I think we'll all kind of hope and pray there's another 100 years before there's another worldwide pandemic like that one.
Well, on the local level, the Daviess County had sought out some extra funds for the innkeeper's tax. And this is exciting to me because as the president of the local visitors commission here in Daviess County, this is big news for what this could mean for our local county here.
Yeah, what that does is it gives the local county the authority to increase the innkeeper tax. And then, again, you would probably know better how those dollars will ultimately be spent. But again, it was just something that was requested by, again, people here in Daviess County. And we worked that through the process. It's in some ways, I wish there were kind of a statewide, I guess, standard when it comes to the innkeeper tax, but it's really a county-by-county basis. And that did pass this session, so it does allow the county to increase the innkeeper's tax. And then I believe that those dollars are generally used for things like maybe tourism-related type activities, convention-type activities, and things along those lines.
Yes, absolutely. It promotes tourism in our county, visitors to come to our county to support our local businesses. And then the ultimate goal is to build a new convention center, which we're certainly going to go headfirst into that.
So I've heard a little bit about that, but not a great deal. So maybe we'll have to talk afterwards. You can kind of catch me up on the details there.
Yes, keep your fingers crossed, hoping for the best with that, because you know and I know it's something that is definitely needed in our immediate area right here in Washington.
Yeah, that's the kind of facility that could really be helpful to draw people into a community.
Most definitely. Senator Eric Bassler, our guest. Again, as we wrap up another session, we're getting caught up on State House news on Focus on the Community this week. Executive powers. This was something that was talked a lot about in this session with the governor. And this was kind of a hot topic here and there.
Yeah, it really was. And I know that there are people that have been very critical of how the governor's handled the last 12 months. As I've said a number of times, and I think the last time you interviewed me, Dwayne, I said that I always encourage people to give people in authority a little bit of slack over the last 12 months for decisions they've had to make. When you think about school superintendents, you think about university presidents, you think about, you know, the governor of Indiana, they've had to make very tough decisions and make them quickly and do it based upon a limited amount of information that tended to change almost daily. And so there were some more, I would say, extreme bills that were offered with respect to executive authority, some of them wanting to essentially do away with it altogether that the governor would have. What we settled on was the governor still has his executive powers like he has in the past. However, one of the greatest frustrations that I think people expressed to legislators, and one of the greatest frustrations legislators had, was the lack of involvement of the legislative process. When you think about there's 100 House of Representative members, there's 50 state senators. We're obviously, you know, closer to the people, if you will, than the governor would be, just because there's only one governor. And there was not really a means for us to have any input, whether it had to do with decisions that were made or how money was being spent that was came from the federal government. And so what this allows us to do, if the Legislative Council, and the Legislative Council is a bipartisan group of legislators from both the House and the Senate, if they decide that an executive order that the governor has issued has a statewide impact, they can then call us back into a special session, call the legislature back into a special session to see if there's any additional input or things that we need to do as a legislature with respect to that emergency declaration. Furthermore, it gives the legislature, during times when we are not in session, the budget committee, and the budget committee is made up of legislators and then a few other people, input on how federal dollars are being spent. We just felt it was important, because it's the legislature that ultimately allocates the dollars and how they're spent, that there's a role there for the Senate and the House if significant dollars are coming from the federal government with respect to an emergency, that we have some input on how those dollars are being spent, instead of it just being made by one person.
And this was one that was, as we said, a little touchy at times because the governor actually vetoed this, right, the first time around?
He did, yeah. He did veto it, and then the veto was overridden by both the House and the Senate, so it has become part of the Indiana Code. And I understand, I understand his perspective on it, but we just felt that it's important that the legislature has a role to play in a significant event like that.
Most definitely. Well, another one that we wanted to definitely cover this morning, and this didn't probably get the press that it deserved, Senator, was the police protection law enforcement reform, right, at the state level here in Indiana.
Yeah, Representative Steriwald on the House side, this is something he'd been working on for quite some time, and it's really related to several of the incidents we've seen take place over the last several years. You think of George Floyd, for an example, and what it has to do with police reform, and this was a bill that was brought again by a Republican, and it had broad based support. It had the support of everyone from the Fraternal Order of Police. Various police associations and organizations were in support of the bill. The Black Legislative Caucus was in support of the bill. It was the only bill this session that received all yes votes in every committee, and then every House and Senate vote that took place on this bill. All 150 of us voted yes. It's a bill that provides some additional funding for the Law Enforcement Academy. It's a bill that provides additional training when it comes to de-escalation. Quite often, if you see the events that have happened over the last several years, you just can't help but think, boy, was there a way that could have been de-escalated, and then therefore we didn't have to see a life taken. So there's going to be additional training when it comes to de-escalation. There was limits put with respect to certain types of holds, if you will. So, for example, on the chokehold when police are detaining someone. Again, it was an excellent bill. Didn't receive a whole lot of, media coverage, if you will. But it was a good bill that received good, broad bipartisan support.
Well, it's so important in this day and age.
It is. Yes, it is.
Senator Eric Bassler, our guest, now with the session closed, I know you're going to be here at home, and you're glad to be back at home, but you're going to be busy because you'll be having, I'm sure, some roundtable gatherings and what have you, hearing from the people once again.
Yeah, we sure will. It's always nice to get session wrapped up because I can get more of a normal life back. Spend time, obviously, here in Washington, in the district, and at my office, and as you know, Dwayne, Julie's got some businesses that I kind of help out with some. But yeah, we will. We will continue to be out this spring and summer at various activities, various events, various speaking engagements, whether it's a Chamber of Commerce or a Rotary Club or what have you. And then again, we'll do our annual legislative roundtables in the fall, where we go to each of our counties and spend an evening meeting with constituents in kind of a group setting. So we'll be doing that again later this year also.
One of the few politicians you always like to give your phone number out there if folks have questions.
I do, Dwayne. And in the 7 years I've been doing this, I can honestly say there's only been probably two or three people that I would say that have kind of abused having my phone number. And that's not bad out of the thousands of people that have it. So happy to. Yep, it's a cell phone number is 812-617-4269. So feel free to call or text that number if there's everything I can help out with.
Well, congratulations again. Job well done to you and to all of the senators and those in the legislative session for wrapping it up, not only in a timely manner, but a week early, getting stuff done on a budget year. So I think that says a lot about everybody. And we go back to that word bipartisanship, which you just don't see a lot in this day and age, especially more and more at the national level, it appears.
It was a good session, and hopefully we can continue to keep it away from maybe some of the more challenging things that they have to deal with in Washington, D.C. It's good to be a Hoosier.
Absolutely. Well, Senator Eric Bassler, thank you so much. Appreciate your visit on Focus on the Community this week.
Dwayne, thanks so much for having me.
Focus on the Community, presented by First Federal Savings Bank, Washington's locally owned bank. You can download a podcast of today's show by visiting our website at WAMWAMFM.com. I'm Dwayne Shake, inviting you to tune in each weekend as we shine a spotlight on a topic important to our community and focus on the community here on WAMW.